A senior at D.C. Everest High School in Weston, near Wausau, Wisconsin, is gaining global attention for organizing a boycott of the school's lunch program tomorrow. We will hear why, and we will also welcome in a public health expert talking about the federal government's new nutritional standards for school lunch programs. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, November 12th. We will ask for your questions and your views about the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, which has nutritional standards, different nutritional standards. It limits processed foods and limits calories. It replaces fats and sugars with fruits and vegetables and whole grains. Do you think that this is a good idea or a bad idea? What's right or wrong about it? Do you think the kids who are boycotting the lunch program are on the right track? Or do you think limiting or eliminating things like Pop-Tarts and Rice Krispie bars make sense? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our first guest. We are joined by Megan Hellrud, who is a senior at D.C. Everest Senior High in Weston. She is an organizer of Pack a Bag DCE, which is a boycott against the school's lunches set for tomorrow, Thursday. Good morning, Megan. Oops, I'm sorry, I have to turn the right button on. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, so what's wrong with the lunches that are served at D.C. Everest?
Well, you know, we love our school. Not just our school. There are thousands of other schools that comply with this act, but what we're seeing is that the schools are focusing more on the calorie restrictions than on the actual serving of healthy foods. So we're finding small portions of very processed food. So we're just finding smaller portions of pizzas and smaller portions of chicken patties. We're not finding actual healthy foods because us kids, we actually do like to eat healthy, surprisingly, but in high school, anyway, we do like to eat healthy foods, but we're just not offered the right kinds of healthy foods.
Can't you load up on you know, a big salad along with that tiny piece of pizza?
Well, they don't offer a salad every day. They only offer salad, I think, on like Tuesdays or Fridays, but you're also restricted in your salad. So if you get a salad, they tell you you take too much ranch, or you can't take that many croutons, or there's the fixings that are put on it. They always limit us on that.
Yeah. Well, I read in the local paper coverage of this, I think it was the local paper, that said that there was some people being upset that things like Pop-Tarts and Rice Krispie bars were no longer being served.
Right. Every morning they have a breakfast a la carte thing that you can get, and they used to serve tarts and Rice Krispie bars for the morning, and kids will just walk in there, like if they're in study hall, and they'll just grab a snack to work, like to finish working on their homework with. But now they can't serve Pop-Tarts anymore, and they changed the Rice Krispie bars to whole grain Rice Krispie bars, and you can't have them before a specific time.
Yeah. So what are you hoping to accomplish with this this boycott?
What we're hoping to accomplish is that through our boycott, Washington will somehow get the message that kids aren't happy with this new act. We're definitely not attacking our school. We're not trying to get our school in trouble because we know that it goes higher than just the local school. So we're just trying to get this to go to Washington and get people there to notice that kids really aren't happy with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, your school, if it didn't accept federal money for the lunch programs, could do whatever it wanted to do. Do you want them to do that?
Well, I can completely understand why a school would comply with the act because, I mean, if you comply with it, you get all the federal money for it. You can put that towards your school. But I feel like I would probably comply with the act if I was the superintendent or school board member of the school because that's federal money. That's huge because with like budget cuts and everything, we do need the money. So that's why I'm just attacking the act itself because the act either needs to be changed or even cut.
Yeah. Well, what about Megan, the problem before that too much fatty foods and pizzas and mac and cheese, and that's all kids were eating, and kids are getting getting fatter, and the lunches weren't all that healthy. Do you want to go back to that?
Well, it was exactly the same as it is now, except we're just served small portions of it. It's a one-size-fits-all program now. So me, the 90-pound, 4'11 teenager, I'm served the same amount of food that the 220-pound senior football star is.
Ah, so you're concerned that that athlete is going hungry.
Right, and many kids have complained to each other saying, I'm not performing well in my athletics because I'm out of energy. I can't, I don't have enough food in me to be able to perform this athletic. And so a lot of kids are finding out that it's just not working for the one-size-fits-all program. It's just not working.
Yeah, so there isn't any kind of exception for the athlete that maybe he can get an extra piece of pizza?
Well, they'll charge you a whole lot more for it. That's the big thing, is that it's no longer a meal. It's a meal, and then they're charging extra. And a lot of kids are on free and reduced lunch prices, which means that they can't afford to be getting more food. Mm-hmm. They are stuck on that track of free and reduced lunch. And there's a lot of kids that depend on that one meal in the day to get through the rest of their day.
So how any idea how many students are going to participate tomorrow in this boycott?
I have no idea at the moment, because I guess I won't know until I see tomorrow. But for the most part, we've gotten so much support from so many students. So I'm expecting a lot of people to join in.
And you're asking them to just not get the school lunch program, but pack their own lunch?
Right.
Yeah, and you have gotten a lot of media attention. We noticed an article in the UK Daily Mail about this effort. How surprised are you?
I'm pretty surprised that it took off so quickly. Like, the whole point of doing the boycott was to get the attention of the media while we're doing it. So it's a good surprise, but I was surprised that it's gotten that far, with a matter of 2 days.
So I know that your parents are behind your efforts. I read that. But what about school officials? Are they thrilled about this boycott?
I'm not really sure. They haven't really talked to me about it because, I don't think they really want to mess with my student, my voice and all that. But they haven't really talked to me about it, so I'm not really sure how they're feeling.
Yeah.
There was a letter that my superintendent put on the school website, but it just addressed the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act and the facts about it, which I can understand.
Yeah, well, we've had some people on Facebook posting comments along these lines. Barbara from Bessemer, Michigan, actually called and couldn't stand the line, and she says she works in a school system. She thinks the changes are positive, and she says the reason that kids are rejecting the change is that they just resent being told to eat healthier foods. What's your response to that?
Well, like I said, it's not healthier foods. It's processed foods that we're being served. Our meals are required to have an entree, a milk, and a side of a veggie or fruit. But the schools count a box of raisins to be a fruit. It's not anything. And the apples that were served are always very spoiled, and they just don't serve us those healthy foods that the Act says it's supposed to.
Yeah. So do you think your school, though, bears some responsibility? Couldn't they adhere to the guidelines and still give you, decent stuff?
Well, I feel like it's not just my school, because I've seen so many pictures. Like, people have talked to me from West Virginia and Texas, and they're sending me pictures of their school lunches, and it looks exactly the same as mine. So I think that the schools are just, like, they're scrunched for money is what they are, and they're not able to purchase the more healthy foods, because healthy foods are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
So I think they're just not able to fund for those healthy foods.
And so what are you going to have for lunch tomorrow?
What am I having?
Yeah.
I'm having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with a protein bar and yogurt.
Yeah. And your hopes then, what do you hope happens as a result of tomorrow's boycott?
I hope that I'm hoping that we'll be able to reach out to Washington, but we're going to have to go through that through the media because that's what our link is to Washington. So I hope that they find that students that are coming in this many numbers to not eat school lunch on that one day. I mean, it's a national thing now, too. There's students from across the country that are participating in this day. So I hope that Washington will be able to figure that out and see that kids just aren't happy.
And make some modifications, perhaps? Maybe, as you say, not make it one size fits all?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Megan, for being with us.
Thank you.
Megan Hellrud is a senior at D.C. Everest High School in Weston, which is near Wausau, and an organizer of this boycott of the school lunch program. Started in her school, but she, as you just heard, said that there are schools nationwide taking part. Well, we will we'll talk with a public health expert about those concerns that you just heard from Megan, and talk about the debate over the federal guidelines for school lunch programs, and welcome your questions and your views. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Big Question on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are asking you in today's big question whether you support or oppose the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, which sets nutritional standards for school lunch programs. And we're wondering if you think it's a good idea, a bad idea, and why. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next guest is Dr. Patrick Remington, an associate dean for public health and a professor of population health sciences at the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you just heard Megan Hellrud tell us why she was organizing this school lunch boycott. What's your reaction to that?
I think it's great. It's important for kids to get involved in the debate, not only about the foods that they're eating at home and at school, but also about the whole process of how guidelines are set for institutions, and those can be unhealthy by default if you don't think about the types of food that your kids are eating or that you're eating as a student, or they can be healthy by design. And as your guest in the first hour this morning talked about, designing the environment. In effect, the options that kids are provided for school lunches is one really important way and an effective way to improve diets and help children become healthy.
Well, explain just in a nutshell what the guidelines tell schools. And again, to clarify, this act is for schools that accept the federal money to put on a school lunch program.
That's right. Oftentimes, you hear that this is the federal government forcing schools to provide foods in certain ways. It's a requirement if you accept the federal assistance. But as Megan pointed out, most school districts today are strapped for funds and would be remiss in not accepting the federal funds. But they're guidelines, and it's the implementation of those guidelines that really is important. And so one way to get there, as she mentioned, would be to simply take the processed foods and cut them in half. By focusing only on the calorie guidelines. But the other way is to provide fresh fruits and vegetables and increase servings of healthy foods. There are fewer calorie restrictions on salads, for example, or healthy fruits and vegetables. So I think this boycott is a good way to get attention to the issue. And I suspect that the choices that kids will have in Wausau will be better following this discussion.
Interesting. So the guidelines do say limit calories, limit sugar and fat and all these things. And you can do that by limiting processed foods?
Oh, certainly, yes. I recommend that every parent or every person visit their school and spend a little time in the cafeteria. I had the chance to do that when my kids were young. And it's an amazing process to see hundreds of kids going through in 15 minutes and eating food. So it's a bit of a chaotic setting. Food lines move fast, and lots of food is wasted. So it's not a perfect setting, obviously. Yeah. We'd like to have the idyllic setting where the kid sits down at home and comes home for lunch and has food that mom or dad prepare. But given that we feed kids in school, then we have to have guidelines and approaches that do it in the best way we can.
But what's your reaction to what Megan says happens at her school? And she says, by the photos she sees on social media, happens in a lot of schools that, you get a half a piece of pizza and a box of raisins and in a crummy apple. It didn't sound very appetizing.
Well, of course, it's always easiest to take the picture of the one food option that looks ridiculous. It's people talk about the ridiculous classification of ketchup as a vegetable. But those are the exceptions. I bet you if you went in and looked at the general choices and options available for kids in your school, that you'd be impressed. Again, and the exceptions are the 220-pound football player. That's the exception and not the rule.
Well, should that football player get more food?
Well, first of all, there's no restrictions on what parents can provide in a backpack, what teams can provide after school. So to think that the guidelines for healthy lunches and healthy breakfasts limit children's ability to get food who are in extracurricular activities or sports is not correct. There's no rule that says that a kid who has higher caloric needs can't meet them outside of the school day.
Yeah, the principal at DC Everest apparently says students have varying nutritional needs, and there's no good way to have a one-size-fits-all approach. Do you agree or disagree with that sentiment?
Oh, agree, yeah. The best predictor of your calorie needs is how much you exercise. It's not your size or your weight or even your age. It's how many calories you're burning. And we'd like nothing more than kids to eat more as a result of exercising more. And the second thing is that when you eat more, make sure that those foods are healthier. Fruits and vegetables, whole grain breads are the healthier choice. And if we design, again, as the first hour discussed, if you make it healthier by design, then you take those temptations away from kids to pick a Rice Krispies bar for breakfast, which, by the way, would increase insulin following the consumption as a breakfast meal and would lead to increased hunger and increased caloric intake.
It's funny. She said she could still have a whole grain Rice Krispie bar or something. But it didn't taste very good, apparently. Leah in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Leah.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a 16-year-old who goes to a public high school in Green Bay, and she is a swimmer, so she has a high caloric intake also. But the school lunch, she says, the whole wheat options, the whole wheat noodles, the whole wheat rolls, she would more than happy to choose those, except the rolls tend to be hard and the noodles are mushy and nothing tastes very good, so she will choose a salad. Well, the only salad option that the school has is iceberg lettuce, which doesn't contain very many nutrients. It's just basically water. So she brings things from home to add to her salad. And I was just wondering if there was a way that the schools could introduce more vegetables into the salad bar for her friends who are choosing the salad. But there isn't much to the salad.
Yeah, and I guess Megan said that they only offer salads twice a week at her school. What's the deal with that, Dr. Remington?
Well, that's a great point. And In my own home, I grew up on iceberg lettuce. I thought it was the best form of salad, and I've learned otherwise. I think we need to work with our schools and with the people who are preparing the menus to say that iceberg lettuce isn't the only form of salad. You can make whole grain foods taste better, but you can also make the whole grain the less tasty option. So I think it is about the spirit of the guidelines is not to make the food less tasty. It's to really change culture, to make the healthy foods the default choice. And you can do that. Anybody who's prepared foods at home know that you can make the healthy options taste just as good. But it's not by default. You have to really work at it. And input from this parent to the school would be very helpful in doing that.
Well, we're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Dr. Patrick Remington, who is Associate Dean for Public Health and a Professor of Population Health Sciences at the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking about the federal school lunch guidelines and the debate that is surrounding them. We are talking with a public health expert about the reasoning behind the newish federal nutritional standards for school lunch programs, talking about the debate that is taking place over those school lunch guidelines, the debate over the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. We just heard in our first half hour from a high school student, a senior at D.C. Everest High School, near Wausau, who is organizing a boycott of the school's lunch program tomorrow. She is hoping that the federal government takes note and makes some modification to these standards. She says that kids are not getting enough really to eat. She says what they are getting is hardly even edible. We welcome your thoughts and your questions about the federal school lunch guidelines, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Oh, we also have an online big question posted. You can find that at wpr.org/joy and vote in today's big question. Our guest is Dr. Patrick Remington, Associate Dean for Public Health and a Professor of Population Health Sciences at the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. And before we take more calls and get more reaction, Dr. Remington, let's reset the stage here. Why did the standards change? Why do we have a Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act?
Well, this is obviously in response to an epidemic of obesity, not just in kids, but in adults and in every community across the nation. Today, I just read today that about 25% of young adults who are interested in joining the military are not eligible because of obesity. The rates of obesity have tripled in kids. We see diabetes, even early symptoms of cardiovascular disease in children today, which we never saw before. So it's really a crisis. And it isn't because kids are any less interested in being healthy. It's because the environment has changed. Fewer opportunities for exercise and moving about, and more fast foods, less healthy foods. So we clearly have to do something. Not doing anything is not an option. And so this is an attempt of the federal government to provide guidelines to schools, but they're only guidelines. The implementation is key. And what we're hearing from Megan and the students at D.C. Everest is that it's not been implemented well. And so I think rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater and trying to toss the guidelines entirely, it's to make them better, make them more adaptable to schools, but at the end of the day, we should have healthier food choices for kids.
Let's go back to the phones. Paul in Menominee Falls is with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Kudos to the federal government. I started eating school lunches in 1982. I'm a teacher, and I eat them regularly. And I've seen firsthand the change in what has been offered. Years ago, there were calorie heavy, a lot of treats, and we don't see that now. We see fruit and vegetable offerings every day. I still see on occasion, which I do disagree with, they'll offer what I call breakfast for lunch, or they'll give the kids, you know, like a pancake or something like that. But, you know, I've seen a huge shift, and I really think that the criticism is misguided. The last thing I'd like to say is that there's that adage, you've never seen a child eat better than their parents. And so we've got to be the parent here. You know, sure, kids may stand up and protest. That's fine. Let them voice their opinion. But I totally agree with your guest. And we've got to see the big picture. And speaking firsthand, I've seen the change. And I think it's great.
A reaction, Dr. Remington?
Well, that's the best call of the day, I think, that somebody who's been eating that lunch for as many years as Paul has been and can see the change. We remember a day when the thought of drinking skim milk was really undesirable. And today, if you've ever gone back and had a glass of whole milk, most people find that to be unpalatable. And that's only been 20 or 30 years, major changes in food preferences. And I think if you pulled out a TV dinner or a cafeteria selection from the 1970s, you would have been amazed at the foods we were feeding our kids. It's healthier today. So anybody who has an opinion about this should base it in observation, should go in, spend some time eating the food, and then provide input on what the policy should be.
Well, you know, officials in Manitowoc reportedly have said that a lot of the fruits and veggies and healthier options that they're required to serve wind up in the garbage. How do we discourage this from happening?
Well, change will come slowly. Eventually, tastes change. And as Paul mentioned, that is not just the school's responsibility. It's really something that should come from the home. So anytime you put different foods in front of kids, they're going to go with their old preferences. But over time, you should see less waste. And hopefully the tater tots and the Rice Krispies treats will end up in the garbage over time.
Well, here's another wrinkle. Manitowoc schools also said they had to raise lunch prices because more students are bringing in their own bagged lunches, which in turn hurts low-income families. That's an unintended consequence?
There are always unintended consequences of policies, and those are the that's the duty, really, of our schools and our administration to adapt to those unintended consequences. So if in making healthier school lunches, the demand falls and prices rise, we need to respond by providing subsidies for kids who will be challenged by that. I've never heard of a policy that didn't have an unintended consequence, and I've never heard of a policy that, when implemented, was done so perfectly. So I think this is a great attempt to improve the food that kids get, but it certainly isn't perfect, and even boycotts are ways to improve the conversation and eventually improve the food choices.
And for those just joining us, you mentioned that you think it's great that Megan Hellrud is organizing this boycott because she's taking part in the process. But what do you expect to result from something like this?
Well, we actually have a Master of Public Health program where we teach graduate students how to be effective in their community, and they should take a lesson from Megan. She's engaged the media, and now policymakers and public radio are paying attention. So I think it's an important thing that she's doing. I expect she'll have a bright future as a public health leader someday. Maybe she should consider the University of Wisconsin-Madison in her college choice next year.
Good sell. But you think that maybe even her own school might say, maybe we can implement this differently?
I would think that there's going to be a response. First of all, parents will get more involved, more aware of the food and nutrition issue. And I suspect that a year from now, the policy may not change from Washington, but its implementation will be improved.
Well, we have Dave who emailed this question. Is part of the problem that schools get their food, their meals, from large processed food distributors?
There's no question when you try and cut costs that you're going to decrease quality. A couple of the Facebook postings to this radio show comment that why don't we go back to having cooks in the kitchen and doing it the right way. That's more expensive. So it's really up to communities how much you want to invest in your schools. If you're cutting costs and trying to save money, institutional foods will be less expensive, but I think you get what you pay for in the food that we provide to kids. You'd think it would be it would not be a place where we're trying to cut costs, the quality of the foods and the types of things that kids get in schools.
Are you aware of how popular or growing the farm to school table movement is going?
We have a very strong movement in this state. The state has a program encouraging that, and I think it's a win-win program where it encourages local sustainable agriculture. It increases awareness for kids of agriculture and really then provides kids with healthy options. So that's a great example of a program that could complement this the school lunch program. So I encourage everybody who's concerned about the policies that come from Washington to look at local initiatives like the Farm to School program.
Mary in Pewaukee is with us now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Wow.
I wanted to say kudos to Megan, although I don't believe that they should have complete rein. If they were given nutritional choices and the pupils, students themselves would make the meals up, they would be more likely to eat that food, along with the growing trend with younger and younger people. Like there's a Master Chef with children 9 to 12 years old that are actually cooking unbelievable meals that I couldn't make at the drop of a hat without a recipe. I think we could go that route or try that.
That's interesting. Have some students involved in creating the menu, even having some students, a program of students cooking the food. What do you think of that, Dr. Remington?
Again, I haven't been in schools, elementary schools or high schools for a while, but I think we have moved away as a society from home-cooked meals and sharing meals together. All the research points towards the benefits of creating foods from fresh fruits and vegetables as opposed to buying packaged foods, and I think the same research shows in schools that providing real food for kids to eat as opposed to processed foods would be a healthier option. And again, I think part of the good thing that can result from a boycott is increased conversations about ways to respond.
Yeah, we have Stephanie on Facebook says, athletes need more food. And she goes on to say, increasing activity should be prioritized over decreasing calories. What's your reaction to that?
Absolutely correct. We have focused too much on food. Although fit by design or healthy by design is an important public health approach, that you make the healthy choice the easy choice, so that as you go through a school lunch line, you don't see Rice Krispies treats and tater tots the first item to choose from, that you have healthy choices. And again, research demonstrates that people, when given healthy choices, tend to eat healthier. But eating alone is not going to answer the obesity epidemic, focusing on the diet alone. We need to get kids back to being active. We've designed away recess. We've taken out physical education. When physical education classes are held, their children today are less active than in the past. We need to redesign the entire environment to promote physical activity because, it's a simple formula. Body weight equals calories in, less calories consumed. And if we simply focus on eating less, you'll not be successful. You have to focus on increasing physical activity throughout the day, not just in school, but at home and on weekends.
Our guest is Dr. Patrick Remington. He is Associate Dean for Public Health and a Professor of Population Health Sciences at the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. He is talking with us about the debate that's taking place over the healthy, Hunger Free Kids Act. It's the new-ish federal guidelines, nutritional standards that that schools around the country and here in Wisconsin are adhering to. And some controversy is taking place, including a organized boycott of school lunches set for tomorrow, organized by a Wausau area high school student. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The point of the boycott, according to our guest, was to get the federal government to somehow change these nutritional standards to make sure it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Big Question. I'm Joy Cardine asking you to weigh in on today's big question. Do you think the new school lunch guidelines, which limit calories and set nutritional standards, are a good or a bad idea? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, Dr. Remington, our high school student who's organizing this boycott said she wants the federal government to take notice and to change these guidelines, that it can't be one size fits all. What about that?
Well, I think we're hearing from a student in one school district in one state, or one school in one school district in one state. I would recommend that we look around the state of Wisconsin for places that have actually implemented the guidelines and have had some success, where kids and parents and teachers find the school lunches to be significantly healthier than they've been in the past. Because it's not so much guidelines. As you know, the details, devil's in the details on rules that come from Washington. So I'd look around for places that have figured out how to go from iceberg lettuce to all the healthy options for salads, for places that have figured out it's not just cutting the pizza slice in half, but it's about healthier options with whole grain vegetables and other choices. So I encourage the debate and the conversation, but again, rather than simply trying to eliminate the guidelines, let's try and find places that have used them to actually improve the school lunches in real practice.
Ellen in Duluth is with us now. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I've been composting the food waste from an elementary school in Duluth off and on for the past 2 decades, and I have quite a few observations about it. One is that, well, this is an elementary school I've been dealing with. One is that elementary students, A, need more time for lunch because some of them are so small they can barely get their milk open by the time lunch is over. B, many of them either have tiny, tiny mouths or very few teeth, so they can't even eat the fruit unless it's cut up well. I spent almost an entire year contacting the principal of the school approximately once a month because I was getting 30 gallons of totally untouched apples per week, and it was because they weren't cut up. And when I finally would convince him to tell the lunch staff to cut up the apples, the waste went down by about 3/4 because the kids were able to eat the apples, and then the lunch staff would get lazy again, stop cutting up the apples, and I would have 30 gallons of apples again. Also, when I first started, I had kids who were helping me, and they were kind of horrified by the amount of waste. So under their own initiative, this was like sixth graders, they did a whole school survey of what kind of entrees the kids liked and what kinds they didn't, because the ones they didn't like were just going right into composting without being touched. And so the staff cut out the really unpopular entrees, which helped a lot because then the kids would actually eat their lunch. And they also got a policy change through the school district so that they could switch the size of the the first offering of the entree so that the tiny little kindergartners didn't get this. Well, they actually did all get the same amount to start with, but the kindergartners wouldn't go back for seconds, thirds, and fourths, and the larger kids would, and they could do that without getting charged extra. Yes. So I have, you know, several suggestions. One is lunch has to be longer.
Right, and we got that, Ellen, and very short on time. What do you think of those ideas, Dr. Remington?
I can't think of a better person to tell schools what needs to be improved than the person doing composting. Same as can be said about the restaurant. It's the dishwasher who's scraping uneaten food off the plate and into the disposal that knows what isn't selling and what can be improved. I think it's a great example. The 30 gallons of apples uncut, mm-hmm. you simply cut them up and kids start eating them. So again, I think the best approach is if you're concerned about this issue is get into the composting program in your school or get into becoming a parent volunteer. My wife did it for many years when our kids were in elementary school, and she was horrified by some of the approaches, but she worked with the school to improve them. And in the end, things do improve when you have people involved.
Fascinating, Ellen. Thank you very much. Duana in Amory, we're very short on time, but I do want to get you on. What do you have to say about this?
The comment I wanted to make is for the last 3 years, I've been involved in a summer feeding program. The school fed the children during summer school, and a local church took over the feeding after summer school was ended so that the kids had food during the summer and a nutritious lunch. We had to follow the same Department of Public Instruction and federal guidelines that the school did. What I learned was a lot. At our facility, we cooked everything from scratch. The kids loved the food. We were feeding about 100 kids a day in a population of a town of about 3,000. What I did learn, though, is all the cooks I worked with were volunteering their time. And if we had to pay a staff, we would have never been able to do that. So it really gave me an awakening that the schools are really doing, in many cases, the best they can with the limited funds they have.
Thank you very much, Duana. Well, I guess if maybe we paid the school lunch staff more, that might help.
I think it's a good way to close the hour because you can complain about the outcomes or the opportunities for kids to eat, but if we don't support this financially, if you don't get involved to not only look at the quality of the food, but what we're really doing to support this effort, you'll get the results that you deserve. And it is an important, it's one of the most important things in schools is not only to have kids be educated, but also be healthy.
Well, we're out of time. A very busy hour. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Patrick Remington is with the UW-Madison School of Health. Thanks to Jennifer Dargan. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. You can vote online. WPR.org/joy.